Innumerable, those who hated me without knowing me, spread libels against me. A woman for whom I had great love and whom I had even extricated from an engagement which she had continued in for several years and contributed to her discarding the person to whom she had been attached, suffered her mind to resume its fondness for that pernicious engagement. She became violently enraged against me for having broken it off. Although I had freely been at some expense to procure her freedom, still she went to the Bishop of Grenoble to tell him that I had counseled her to do an act of injustice. She then went from confessor to confessor, repeating the same story, to animate them against me. As they were too susceptible of the prejudices infused, the fire was soon kindled in all quarters. There were none but those who knew me and who loved God that took my part. They became more closely united to me in sympathy through my persecution. It would have been very easy for me to destroy the calumny, as well with the Bishop of Grenoble. I needed only to tell who the person was and show the fruits of her disorder. I could not declare the guilty person without making known at the same time the other who had been her accomplice, who now, being touched of God, was very penitent. I thought it best for me to suffer and be silent. There was a very pious man who knew all her history, from the beginning to the end of it, who wrote to her that if she did not retract her lies, he would publish the account of her wicked life, to make known both her gross iniquity and my innocence. She continued some time in her malice, writing that I was a sorceress, with many other falsehoods. Sometime after she had such a cruel remorse of conscience on this account, that she wrote both to the bishop and others to retract what she had said. She induced one to write to me to inform me that she was in despair for what she had done, that God had punished her. After these recantations, the outcry abated, the bishop disabused, and since that time he has testified a great regard for me. This creature had, among other things, said that I caused myself to be worshipped, also other unparalleled follies. From Marseille, I knew not how or whither I should turn next. I saw no likelihood either of staying or of returning to Grenoble, where I had left my daughter in a convent. Father Lacombe had written to me that he did not think I ought to go to Paris. I even felt a strong repugnance to the idea of going, which made me think it was not yet the time for it. One morning I felt myself inwardly pressed to go somewhere. I took a conveyance to go to see the Marchioness of Prunai, which was, I thought, the most honorable refuge for me in my present condition. I thought I might pass through Nice on my way to her habitation, as some had assured me I might. But when I arrived at Nice, I was greatly surprised to learn that the conveyance could not pass the mountain. I knew not what to do, nor which way to turn, alone, forsaken of everybody, and not knowing what God required of me. My confusion and crosses seemed to increase. I saw myself without refuge or retreat, wandering as a vagabond. All the tradesmen whom I saw in their shops appeared to me happy, in having a dwelling of their own in which to retire. Nothing in the world seemed harder than this wandering life to me, who naturally loved propriety and decorum. As I was in this uncertainty, not knowing what course to take, one came to tell me that next day a sloop would set off, which used to go in one day to Genoa, and that if I chose it, they would land me at Savona, from whence I might get myself carried to the Marchioness of Prunai's house. To that I consented, as I could not be supplied with any other way. I had some joy at embarking on the sea. I said in myself, if I am the dregs of the earth, the scorn and off-scouring of nature, I am now going to embark on the element which above all others is the most treacherous. If it be the Lord's pleasure to plunge me in the waves, it shall be mine to perish in them. There came a tempest in a place dangerous for a small boat, and the mariners were some of the wickedest. The irritation of the waves gave a satisfaction to my mind. I pleased myself in thinking that those mutinous billows might probably supply me with a grave. Perhaps I carried the point too far in the pleasure I took at seeing myself beaten and bandied by the waters. Those who were with me took notice of my intrepidity, but knew not the cause of it. I asked some little hole of a rock to be placed in, there to live separate from all creatures. I figured to myself that some uninhabited island would have terminated all my disgraces and put me in a condition of infallibly doing thy will. Thou designest me a prison far different from that of the rock, and quite another banishment than that of the uninhabited island. Thou reservest me to be battered by billows more irritated than those of the sea. Calumnies prove to be the unrelenting waves to which I was to be exposed in order to be lashed and tossed by them without mercy. By the tempest we were kept back, and instead of a short day's passage to Genoa, we were 11 days making it. How peaceable was my heart in so violent an agitation. We could not land at Savona. We were obliged to go on to Genoa. We arrived there in the beginning of the week before Easter. While I was there, I was obliged to bear the insults of the inhabitants caused by the resentment they had against the French because of the havoc of a late bombardment. The Doge was newly gone out of the city and had carried off with him all the coaches. I could not get one and was obliged to stay several days at excessive expenses. The people there demanded of us exorbitant sums, inasmuch for every single person as they would have asked for a company at the best eating places in Paris. I had little money left, but my store in Providence could not be exhausted. I begged with the greatest earnestness for a carriage at any price to pass the feast of Easter at the Marchioness of Prunai's house. It was then within 3 days of Easter. I could scarce any way get myself to be understood. By the force of entreaty, they brought me at length a sorry coach with lame mules and told me that they would take me readily to Verceil, which was only 2 days' journey, but demanded an enormous sum. They would not engage to take me to the Marchioness of Prunai's house, as they knew not where her estate lay. This was to me a strong mortification, for I was very willing to go to Verceil. Nevertheless, the proximity of Easter and want of money in a country where they used every kind of extortion and tyranny left me no choice. I was under an absolute necessity of submitting to be thus conveyed to Verceil. Thus Providence led me whither I would not. Our muleteer was one of the most brutal men, and for an increase of my affliction, I had sent away to Verceil the ecclesiastic who accompanied us, to prevent their surprise at seeing me there after I had protested against going. That ecclesiastic was very coarsely treated on the road through the hatred they bore to the French. They made him go part of the way on foot, so that, though he set off the day before me, he arrived there only a few hours sooner than I did. As for the fellow who conducted us, seeing he had only women under his care, he treated us in the most insolent and boorish manner. We passed through a wood infested with robbers. The muleteer was afraid and told us that if we met any of them on the road, we should be murdered. They spared nobody. Scarcely had he uttered these words when there appeared 4 men well armed. They immediately stopped us. The man was exceedingly frightened. I made a light bow of my head with a smile, for I had no fear and was so entirely resigned to Providence that it was all one to die this way or any other, in the sea or by the hands of robbers. When the dangers were most manifest, then was my faith the strongest, as well as my intrepidity, being unable to wish for anything else than what should fall out, whether to be dashed against the rocks, drowned, or killed in any other way, everything in the will of God being equal to me. The people who used to convey or attend me said that they had never seen a courage like mine, for the most alarming dangers and the time when death appeared the most certain were those which seemed to please me the most. Was it not thy pleasure, O my God, which guarded me in every imminent danger and held me back from rolling down the precipice on the instant of sliding over its dizzy brow? The more easy I was about life which I bore only because thou wast pleased to bear it, the more care thou tookest to preserve it. There seemed a mutual emulation between us, on my part to resign it, and on thine to maintain it. The robbers then advanced to the coach, but I had no sooner saluted them than God made them change their design. having pushed off one another, as it were, to hinder each of them from doing any harm, they respectfully saluted me, and with an air of compassion, unusual to such sorts of persons, retired. I was immediately struck to the heart with a full and clear conviction that it was a stroke of thy right hand, who had other designs over me than to suffer me to die by the hand of robbers. It is thy sovereign power which takes away their all from thy devoted lovers, and destroys their lives with all that is of self, without pity or sparing anything. The muleteer, seeing me attended only with two young women, thought he might treat me as he would, perhaps expecting to draw money from me. Instead of taking me to the inn, he brought me to a mill, in which there was a woman. There was but one single room with several beds in it, in which the millers and muleteers lay together. In that chamber they forced me to stay. I told the muleteer I was not a person to lie in such a place, and wanted to oblige him to take me to the inn. Nothing of it would he do. I was constrained to go out on foot at 10 o'clock at night, carrying a part of my clothes, and to go a good way more than a quarter of a league in the dark, in a strange place, not knowing the way, crossing one end of the wood infested with robbers, to endeavor to get to the inn. That fellow, seeing us go off from the place where he had wanted to make me lodge, hooted after us in a very abusive manner. I bore my humiliation cheerfully, but not without feeling it. But the will of God and my resignation to it rendered everything easy to me. We were well received at the inn, and the good people there did the best in their power for our recovery from the fatigue we had undergone. They assured us the place we had left was very dangerous. Next morning we were obliged to return on foot to the carriage, for that man would not bring it to us. On the contrary, he gave us a shower of fresh insults. To consummate his base behavior, he sold me to the post, whereby I was forced to go the rest of the way in a post chaise instead of a carriage. In this equipage I arrived at Alexandria, a frontier town subject to Spain on the side of the Milanese. Our driver took us, according to their custom, to the post house. I was exceedingly astonished when I saw the landlady coming out not to receive him, but to oppose his entrance. She had heard there were women in the chaise, and taking us for a different sort of women from what we were, she protested against our coming in. On the other hand, the driver was determined to force his entrance in spite of her. Their dispute rose to such a height that a great number of the officers of the garrison, with a mob, gathered at the noise, who were surprised at the odd humor of the woman in refusing to lodge us. With earnestness, I entreated the post to take us to some other house, but he would not. So obstinately was he bent on carrying his point. He assured the landlady we were persons of honor and piety too, the marks whereof he had seen. At last, by force of pressing entreaties, he obliged her to come to see us. As soon as she had looked at us, she acted as the robbers had done. She relented at once and admitted us. No sooner had I alighted from the chaise than she said, "Go shut yourself up in that chamber hard by, and do not stir, that my son may not know you are here. As soon as he knows it, he will kill you." She said it with so much force, as did also the servant maid, that if death had not so many charms for me, I should have been ready to die with fear. The two poor girls with me were under frightful apprehensions. When they stirred or came to open the door, they thought they were coming to kill them. In short, they continued in a dreadful suspense between life and death, till next day when we learned that the young man had sworn to kill any women who lodged at the house. A few days before, an event had fallen out which had like to have ruined him. A woman of a bad life having there privately murdered a man in some esteem that had cost the house a heavy fine, and he was afraid of any more such persons coming, not without reason. Chapter 18. After these adventures and others which it would be tedious to recite, I arrived at Verceil. I went to the inn where I was badly received. I sent for Father Lacombe, whom I thought had already apprised of my coming, by the ecclesiastic whom I had sent before, and who would be of so much service to me. This ecclesiastic was only a little while arrived. How much better on the road should I have fared if I had had him with me? For in that country they look upon ladies accompanied with ecclesiastics with veneration as persons of honor and piety. Father Lacombe came in a strange fret at my arrival, God so permitting it. He said that everyone would think I was come after him, and that would injure his reputation, which in that country was very high. I had no less pain to go. It was necessity only which had obliged me to submit to such a disagreeable task. The father received me with coolness and in such a manner as let me sufficiently see his sentiments, and indeed redoubled my pain. I asked him if he required me to return, adding if he did, I would go off that moment, however oppressed and spent, both with fatigues and fastings. He said that he did not know how the Bishop of Verceil would take my arrival, after he had given over all his expectations of it, and after I had so long and so obstinately refused the obliging offers he had made me, since which he no longer expressed any desire to see me. It seemed to me then as if I were rejected from the face of the earth without being able to find any refuge, and as if all creatures were combined to crush me. I passed that night without sleep, not knowing what course I should be obliged to take, being persecuted by my enemies and a subject of disgrace to my friends. When it was known at the inn that I was one of Father Lacombe's acquaintance, they treated me with greatest respect and kindness. They esteemed him as a saint. The father knew not how to tell the bishop of my arrival, and I felt his pain more than my own. As soon as that prelate knew that I was arrived, he sent his niece, who took me in her coach and carried me to her house. These things were only done out of ceremony, and the bishop, not having seen me yet, knew not what to think of a journey so very unexpected, after I had thrice refused, though he sent expresses on purpose to bring me to him. He was out of humor with me. Nevertheless, as he was informed that my design was not to stay at Verceil, but to go to the Marchioness of Brunei's house, he gave orders for me to be well treated. He could not see me till Easter Sunday was over. He officiated all the eve and all that day. After it was over, he came in a chaise to his niece's house to see me. Though he understood French hardly any better than I did Italian, he was very well satisfied with the conversation he had with me. He appeared to have as much favor for me as he had of indifference before. He conceived as strong a friendship for me as if I had been his sister, and his only pleasure amid his continual occupations was to come and pass half an hour with me in speaking of God. He wrote to the Bishop of Marseille to thank him for having protected me in the persecutions there. He wrote to the Bishop of Grenoble, and he omitted nothing to manifest his regard for me. He now seemed to think alone of finding out means to detain me in his diocese. He would not hear of my going to see the Marchioness of Brunei. On the contrary, he wrote to her to come and settle with me in his diocese. He sent Father Lacombe to her on purpose to exhort her to come, assuring her that he would unite us all to make a congregation. The Marchioness entered into it readily, and so did her daughter. They would have come with Father Lacombe, but the Marchioness was sick. The bishop was active and earnest in collecting and establishing a society of us, and found several pious persons and some very devout young ladies who were all ready to come to join us. But it was not the will of God to fix me thus, but to crucify me yet more. The fatigue of traveling made me sick. The girl, also whom I brought from Grenoble, fell sick. Her relations, who were covetous, took it in their heads that, if she should die in my service, I would get her to make a will in my favor. They were much mistaken. Far from desiring the property of others, I had given up my own. Her brother, full of this apprehension, came with all speed. The first thing he spoke to her about, although he found her recovered, was to make a will. That made a great noise in Verceil. He wanted her to return with him, but she refused. I advised her to do what her brother desired. Some of the officers of the garrison, to whom he told ridiculous stories, as that I wanted to use the sister badly. He pretended she was a person of quality. They gave out what I was still afraid of, that I was come after Father Lacombe. They even persecuted him on my account. The bishop was much troubled, but could not remedy it. The friendship he had for me increased every day, because, as he loved God, so he did all those whom he thought desired to love God. As he